Razor Podcast. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is episode number 13, and we have finally concluded Lucky 13. We have finally concluded Anathem by Neal Stephenson. Yay!
Or Anathem.
Or Anathem.
Or Anathem.
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 However you decide to say it, it is a very long book, and we've been on about a month-long hiatus trying to get through it, although you were done after, like, a week.
I tore through that thing, man. I enjoyed it so much. It took me about 100 pages to climb the hill and sort of get comfortable and learn everything, but then once I did, I thankfully was actually on vacation for a couple days, or I was actually on vacation for like a week and a half, but I took the first couple days of my vacation and did nothing but read the book.
That is such a cheat.
It's not a cheat.
You totally cheated.
How is it a cheat?
Because I just finished yesterday because I didn't have a vacation.
Well, that's not cheating.
You're
that's just
lucky. You're
making
me look bad. You're making me look bad. That's all I'm saying.
I wasn't trying to make you look bad.
Like some big
it's not all about
dummy
you, Belmont.
That can't get through the 900 pages of the book.
That's exactly why I finished it fast. I'm going to make Belmont look really dumb. I'm going to finish this book fast.
All right. Well, anyway, so I hope the book is fresh enough in your mind now that you've been done with it for the whole month.
Which book?
Wait, what are we talking? Is this Neuromancer? Where am I?
Pattern recognition? What?
Yeah, you've probably read three other books since you finished.
I have read two books since I finished.
Oh, but man.
Very short books.
Well, anyway.
No, this left a deep and lasting impression on me. I loved this book, but like we were saying, it takes a while to get in.
Absolutely. It took me about 200 pages, I think.
It took me about 100, I would say. That seems to be right in that region is when people finally stop having to I don't know about you, but I was constantly looking at the glossary. Like, what does that mean? Which person is that? I was like constantly flipping back. I definitely was glad I read the introduction.
Me too.
That helps set it up. And what about the Kalkas? I was having a really interesting discussion on Ning about the Kalkas. Those were these sort of appendices.
Right. Because
everything has a different name in this thing. Nothing is, you know, it's not called an appendice. It's called a Kalka.
Me and the Kalkas was that I missed the first one. I didn't notice that I could go back and read it.
Yeah.
So I totally swished by it. I got to the second one, and that's when I realized that they were in the back of the book. And so I flipped back and I read that one with the bottle, with the spinning bottle.
Uh-huh.
And then I went back and read the first one with the cake. And so then by that point, I had kind of absorbed it a lot more. I didn't really realize that there was a glossary either until about that point. So for the whole first 100, 150 pages, I was just shooting blind. You know, I was just reading and trying to figure out for myself what everything meant, which
and
wasn't easy because he just throws you right in. I mean, he just throws you right off the deck.
It would be hard enough to follow what was going on if you actually had a wide breadth enough understanding of classical Earth history to understand all his references. But then he changes all the names and combines people and, you know, makes allusions to parts of people and change, you know, and it's all invented. I mean, it's very parallel, but it, you know, Occam's razor, I can't remember what he calls it in Anathem now, but it took me a while to go like, oh, wait a minute, that's Occam's razor. And then the Greek philosophers, which aren't Greek, they're something totally different.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a fun game to play. What is all of this stuff? But it really requires a strategy to read this book.
Totally. And even like the Steelyard.
Oh, yeah, that's Occam's razor. Yes. Yes.
That
that's what
thing?
I'm thinking of. Yes. The Steelyard. Yeah.
I've actually gone now and in my day-to-day life based things on the Steelyard.
No kidding.
Been like, well, all right, well, let's think of this in terms of the Steelyard.
Well,
and like, what's the easiest path for this to be true, you know? And it's just kind of put that in my frame of reference now, even though it's not real.
Well, you can call it Occam's razor, and then it will really impress your friends.
Okay, I'll do that from now on.
Because it's the same thing. Or you can call it the Steelyard and really impress your geeky friends.
Right. See, all my friends are geeky anyway. They'd all get the reference, hopefully.
I'm glad I read the I wasn't sure whether to read the Kalkas in line at first because I was afraid that they would be very obtuse and deep, and I was like, well, maybe I should just read them afterwards. But they aren't, and they when I read the first one, I was like, okay, this, I need to read these in line, and I'm kind of wondering why he separated them because they're told from the character's point of view. There's mm-hmm. they're conversational; they would fit very easily within the flow of the narrative.
Like he just cut them out and stuck them in the back of the book.
Yeah, because they had graphs.
No, but I mean, you know, it feels like it, like you said, it was just a chunk taken out of the book
yeah.
and put in the back as a reference piece where it didn't necessarily need to be.
Yeah.
But it was okay. I mean, I understand why. It's like information you don't desperately need to know that didn't really have to be in the main storyline, but it was also useful in kind of getting a grasp on their understanding of the world and their... quote, religion, I guess you could say.
I think the complexity of this book is such that you need to actually evaluate the personality of the person you're recommending it to mm-hmm. so that you can tell them how best to approach it. Matula was writing on the Sword and Laser Ning forum at swordandlaser.ning.com. I got through about 5 pages of Anathem after it was released and gave up. Then I started listening to the audiobook while reading the book at the same time and found it a lot easier to catch. So, I mean, different people are going to have different tricks, but it's worth it. I think that's really the point here is that it's so satisfying. Stevenson does an amazing job of creating a world that you believe, this monastic world that's not religious, it's mathematical, but it has all the trappings of what we would consider a religious organization, and therefore pointing up those parallels, and then really steeping you in a world that obviously is parallel to Earth, but is different enough that at least I didn't feel like, oh, it's just he's just taking everything from Earth and renaming it. I mean, mm-hmm. in essence, he is, but he does it in a way that it feels real.
The one thing that I had a hard time grabbing, and I as I mentioned, I switched from the hardcover version of the book to the Kindle version of the book after about 300 pages maybe mm-hmm. because I was going to Japan and I didn't want to carry the huge hardcover book with me.
I don't blame you.
So I borrowed Ryan's Kindle and I'm not giving it back. I love it. It's mine.
See,
now.
I switched back and forth. I was reading the hardcover at home, but then when I was on the train or traveling around, like, I mean, not to Japan, but the same sort of thing, I didn't want to have to carry that book.
Mm-hmm. But I stopped using the glossary at that point. I kind of just, you know, tried to absorb the information as it came. But the one thing that I never really totally understood in terms of their praxic stuff, their technology, was the sphere. The spheres and the bolts and the cords that
yeah.
very simple things that they have in the consonants. See, these are all words I've never said out loud, so it's going to be weird to talk about them like on the podcast today because I'm not entirely sure how they're properly said, you know?
Well, when we introduced it, I just said convent because I was like, I am not even going to go there. But yeah, there are a lot of made-up words like that. And you should read the introduction if you have it because...
I did.
Not you, but everyone,
means, yeah.
everyone listening because he really explains when he chose to make an equivalent word and when he didn't. Like when they talk about apples, he's like, well, these apples on this planet are not the same as our apples, but it's close enough that it's not worth making up a new word. But some words I really wanted to set out an etymology to, like consent, mm-hmm. like praxis, which really reminded me of his Dark Materials.
Oh, because, yeah.
Because they use that word in that series as well.
Did they? I don't remember that. Was
they
that
do.
The word for technology also?
They talk about praxic items in his Dark Materials somewhat.
How interesting is that?
Yeah, alternate world again.
Yeah, the whole time I was reading the book, at least for the first half before they meet, you know, the quote aliens. I was like, is this just an alternate reality of ours? Is this just a totally is this Earth but in a different, you know, layer of reality?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it was Earth like way far in the future,
mm-hmm.
so far that you didn't have any recollection of what Earth really was, or was it just an alternate reality?
Yeah, so that was very interesting. But New Matter, I was very intrigued by New Matter, and I wanted to learn more about it. And I wish they had explained, they did briefly kind of explain how it came to be and how it was the only thing that the Avowed were able to keep after the third sack, you know, as kind of in terms of the praxic technology stuff. But they didn't really get into what it really, how it works, how they're able to change size with their spheres and you know, go from a large sphere that you can actually stand on to something pill-sized. And
well, it took a while to figure out that that's what was going on, too. It's like, oh, I had my sphere, and then I sat on it, and then I turned it into a baseball and threw it around. It's like, wait, is it the same sphere? Yeah, it's like, exactly. It's like, what? That was one of the few things that stood out as a literary device to me. And I early on decided to just accept it. Like, okay, in this monastic society where they have no technology, obviously they have to have something to bridge the gap and make it easier to tell the story. So that's why he gave them new matter, and they had the sphere and the bolt that they could turn into anything. And it's sort of the thing that kind of, you just, it's the MacGuffin. the way Hitchcock puts it, like, you just don't pay attention to that. Don't look at that too deeply. Just accept it and move on, and everything else will fall into place.
Yep. I loved Zsuzsa's also.
Oh,
like cell
yeah.
phones. They're not cell phones, but they irritate people in the same way that cell phones irritate people in our society. Like, oh, we're trying to eat dinner, and this extra is totally standing there talking on his Zsuzsa, and like, we don't want him to shut up, but he won't shut up.
Such
but
a
then
great
they're
name.
Also kind of like, in my mind, I pictured them as being somewhat tricorder-esque and somewhat like palm, like you know, like the old T1s.
Yeah.
Like something like that, you know, like a handheld device of some kind that also functions as a communicator, communicator/tricorder/cell phone situation.
For some unusual reason, I imagine them having lots of charms hanging off of them, you know, like those little
like
cell phone
cell dongles.
Yes.
Really?
I think there was something in the name Zsuzsa that made it sound like Giga's. Things hanging off of it. Very decorated.
That's funny.
I read in one review
the only thing that kind of took the reviewer out of the world was that at one point apparently they mentioned movie stars, and I was actually looking for this in the book and I never came across it, and that wouldn't have made sense because there's no movies or spielies, right?
So
they wouldn't have been a spielie star. But they never. I never saw that. Did you? Did you ever pick up on that line?
I don't recall that. I mean, there were, of course, when they met the folks from the other planets, the alternate worlds. There were, you know, some
famous people.
Yeah, Jules Verne, for instance.
But at the end, very end of the book. Oh, by the way, there's spoilers in this podcast, so if you haven't finished the book yet, stop listening because we're probably going to be talking about a lot of stuff you don't want to hear.
And we already have,
so I'm sorry. But anyway, at the very end of the book, when everyone from Arb comes up, you know, when a lot of important people come up into the ship to meet with them, and, you know, they've got the pills in their stomach, and they're worried that someone's going to set it off, and they said they brought up famous people. Don't you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was one part of the, like, they had dignitaries, and then they also had popular culture people who came up into the ship with them. You don't remember
that,
do you?
No, I do remember that, but I found the movie star reference.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I just searched it on the Kindle.
Oh, funny, smart.
The constables mostly gaped at them. How many thousands of spielies had been produced about the fictional exploits of the Veilers? The cops couldn't begin to think of them as suspects. They saw them more as tourist attractions, zoo animals, movie stars.
Mm.
What's more, the Veilers knew as much as they knew how to exploit it. They showed us the meaning of posture, pretended to meditate. The cops ate it up. So it goes on. But yeah, I mean, that I had forgotten about that, but that did kind of, it didn't take me totally out of it, but it was definitely Stevenson speaking to me at that point, not the world speaking to, you know, which it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be
but
these recollections.
Raz. No, but it's Raz talking, writing on leaves, you know?
Yeah,
it's
exactly. So
he would
so
never
where
say
did
that.
He get to say, where does he know movie stars? Yeah, that does take you out of it for a second.
Yeah, I must have been skimming at that point or something and not picked up on that word, or because I'm used to reading it.
Yeah, it just didn't strike you.
It didn't hit me in the way it was supposed to. So yeah, that was, what did you think of the ending? I don't even know what else to talk about, because, I mean, there's just so much to talk about.
Well, there's
about.
So, I mean, for one thing, it's like, I really, really, really enjoyed being in the Consent. Mm-hmm. I loved that world. I loved the relationships. I loved it when they left it and they got to see the other world and then they came back. But once it got out on the traveling into the Arctic, mm-hmm. which again, another parallel with His Dark Materials.
True.
Where they're headed up to the pole, right?
Yeah.
Where the aurora is. It started not to lose me, but it started to be like, oh, I really wanted to get back to that. I never really recaptured that flavor of the world that he had when he was in the Consent. It was still interesting. I was still pulled through the story. I had to find out what was going to happen next. The plot is so well constructed that it pulled me through. Mm-hmm. And I did like getting samples of different worlds now. Like, you're seeing the outside world, and then you get drawn into this amazing trip through space. I mean, I can't imagine a more epic trip through space than being shot into space in a spacesuit without a ship.
I know. I know. That freaked me out.
Doesn't it seem like something where you're just sitting around, you're like trying to top stuff? Like, nope, that's been done. That's been done. What if I had them go without a ship?
Yeah, they just go up in a suit and a magnifique.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I love everything about Jules Verne Durand. I just thought he was hilarious. I thought he was an excellent character. Totally random. You know, he was just so different from all the other characters. And so what did you think? What was your honest opinion when you first met him? When you first met the Lateran?
Before you knew who he was?
Yeah. No, I mean, when we figured out that his name was Jules
Verne. When he's been unveiled, yeah.
He's been unveiled as an alien, as it were. Did you think, La Terre. That means the earth in French.
Yes, but Stevenson has done so many things up to that point that are cognates with his, you know, it's sort of like, okay. I mean, it was Antarch is what gave it away to me.
But they made those names for, yeah, I guess. But
as soon as they compared the four worlds and they said, oh, well, one of them is Antarch because it's the only one who had a continent at the South Pole, that's when I knew who we were.
Right.
I was like,
right.
Well, that's obviously us because we have a continent at the South Pole. And unless he's going to be totally a jerk and be like, but it wasn't us. It just happened to be some other world and we're not in this book.
The second they said his name and I was like, okay, that's an Earth name.
Yeah.
I mean, Jules Verne. I mean, hello.
Yeah, that gives it away too.
So that kind of gave it away. And then just everything he said, like the joystick.
Yeah.
Joystick with the mushroom shaped stick. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, that's a joystick. You know, I was laughing at that. And then they said merde, which, you know, is a curse word in French. And just everything they were saying. I don't speak French, but I took Spanish for, I know enough, like, you know, French popular culture words that I could pick up on it. And I took Spanish and know some Latin, that kind of thing. So I was picking up on that. And then finally, when they flat out said, that was called Earth. I was like, yeah, well.
I think the only part that I really didn't love was the, he's dead, but he's not dead. Again, spoiler alerts all over this. We'll just post that in the blog.
So you mean the separate world tracks?
At the end. The separate world tracks at the end where he's like with, what's the guy's name? The old guy. The century or I want to say Centurion, but
oh crud!
But the guy who
Jad.
Who ends up Jad. He's with Jad, and everybody else is gone. And then he goes on this like trippy hallucination trip where they blow up the entire thing. And then he wakes up and he's not dead. He's actually being taken care of.
Yeah.
And Jad's disappeared and they don't know where he is. That just was a little too odd. It was a little too trippy, mystic, drug-induced. Mm-hmm. If the more of the book had been like that up to that point, I might have let it slip. But I was like, wait a minute. Why did we go through all that? Is it just in his mind?
Yeah. And then suddenly, you know, Jad was never actually. He had passed away right after they took off.
Right.
You know, when they got to space, he wasn't even there for that. that whole ordeal.
Or was he?
Or was he? Yeah, that was a little bit on the confusing side. But I just kind of, like you said, accepted it and moved on. I mean, but apparently the lineage obviously had knowledge that that had occurred. So they kind of understood that... was that even the lineage? Oh, see, now I'm all kinds of screwed up.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about this book is I want to read it again. Essentially, yeah. I'm ready to sit down and read the whole thing again. Just, I mean, I don't have time to do that, but I definitely want to because I feel like there's just too much to absorb in one reading.
Right. Because there was the lineage, and then there was Paphlagon, who was, you know, he understood things that were going on that Erasmus didn't, and then they were kind of, you know, on the same page at the very end, but what did that even mean? Yeah, it got a little bit confusing.
I did like that we had the reconstitution at the end. I liked that we got to see what was going on down. A lot of times, and very rightly so, authors will leave you wanting more at mm-hmm. the end. Like, oh, well, you know, and then the future happens and that's for the sequel. And I like that Stevenson went ahead and said, no, let's take you back down. Let's show you what's happening in the future. Just give you a little taste, just enough that you still are left wanting more. But I felt a nice resolution to the book, not like it's a cliffhanger that's leading me to buy Anathem 2.
I hope he writes it, and I hope he names it Anathem 2.
Anathemer.
That would be awesome. I like a happy ending, so I was pleased.
Yeah.
I liked that part. But yeah, it was. I felt like maybe there could have been a little bit more at the ending. Like, I would have liked to have known if people from ARB actually went to the ships and continued on. You know?
Yeah.
Like, did they continue their quest? Or was that just the end of it all? Did they just, you know, people from the ship just kind of hang out? Like, what happened to them?
Well, that's what you'll get in Anathem 2.
Okay. Okay, good.
They'll go to the next alternate world.
Right? Like, I didn't miss some kind of obscure reference to what happened to the... to the people on the ship.
Well, you know where you can find out.
Where?
The wiki. There is an Anathem wiki at wikia.com that I actually wanted to contribute to right when I finished, but I had, again, was on vacation mm-hmm. and I left my laptop at home. But they have they've got about 135 articles, and so it's still growing. But you can go and you can look up, like, they have one page of ARB Earth connections.
I'm if on you're that just page like right now, actually.
If you're just like, who the heck is Adracones? Oh, it's Pythagoras.
Yeah.
If you could, that's Plato. One that's actually easier to figure out. But yeah, Thelinus is Socrates, Protus is Plato, all of that sort of thing. So you can look up ARB. And just find out, like, okay.
Oh, even got all the theorems and their connections to real life, so you can see that. Oh, cool. Oh, this is very interesting. I wish I had known this when I was reading.
Well, yeah, and it's been growing a little bit all the time, so I definitely encourage Anathem enthusiasts to jump in and help build the wiki.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. This is very cool. I'm still not entirely... convinced that it isn't an alternate reality and that they weren't just jumping through realities?
Well, yeah, I think they were, right? I mean, these are alternate Earths, and they're going from one alternate reality to the next.
Yeah, yeah.
But each one is more real. I mean, that's the interesting part, where it's like, oh, but you're on a track. So each one is a reflection of the other.
Yeah, I think that was open to interpretation.
Certainly.
I don't know. I don't know whether I believe I agree that I think the most, you know, the most realistic way of looking at it is that it is separate world tracks and that it's separate realities and it's all the same world. There is no different world. But at the same time, you could also what do they call it? Convergent evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about that.
Yeah. Convergent evolution.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the saying. They talk
so they're
about
all in the same
book,
universe.
Mm-hmm. They're all in the same universe, but, you know, different galaxies, and they're all kind of similar because of similar circumstances.
Well, and this reminds me of when they're at the dinner parties. Mm-hmm. And
we're having a messel right now. We're in dialogue right now, Tom.
Absolutely. And I want to have messels now. I mean, I don't really want to make people stand behind me and serve me, but yeah, I want to have like a little private walled off place where you eat. You kind of do it at the pub, but it's too unorganized.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends. I mean, it's all about what you're into. If you like,
you do it at a good pub. That's true.
If you're just having a free form conversation, or if you're just, you know, do you want to have it planned out? I don't know. I think we kind of do that already.
I commend your upside in identifying that.
How totally do you think in this glossary sense now? Like, I just take words and plant them into my everyday thoughts now.
It wears off, I have to say. I was doing exactly that for quite a bit after I was finished reading. But it depends on who you hang out with. I mean, I was around people who hadn't read the book, so they were just looking at me like, what? But yeah, I don't do it as much anymore. But yeah, for a while, it really invades your thought process. I mean, this is a meme. This is more than one meme. This is like a million memes.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything else you want to add about it?
God, yes. Millions
talked
of things.
We've for a really long time. But...
Yeah, but I don't know where to start. I mean, the thing I liked the most about it is it's a combination of some of my favorite things from the Baroque cycle, mm-hmm. which is based on real history, but in that same sort of technological flavor of the Constants, and Cryptonomicon. Where you have that sort of adventure hacker spirit moving the characters through the plot.
Okay, so I have a question for you. One thing that I couldn't quite figure out was the whole relationship and backstory between the Avowt and the Eta. Like, what was the deal with the Eta? Like, what is their parallel to our world?
I don't know that we have a parallel to the Eta. Maybe we do, and I'm just missing it. But I mean, they are a necessary evil. You're basically saying, like, look, we are going to abandon all technology, but we're not going to be Amish. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just not going to develop anymore. But the stuff we have, we're going to keep. And so you need IT support.
Yeah, was that what that was?
Like, I kind of feel like that was sort of a clever play. You know, it didn't come from there in the world, but
they never really explained why they were almost like second class citizens.
Well, because, okay, now that I think I get, which is they are the unclean, right? They touch the technology. And so in a world that has this necessary evil of some technology, but essentially you want to wall yourself up from being exposed to anything outside of the consent. The Eta have to know what's going on. They have to go buy parts. They have to, you know, keep up on things, yeah, and interact with the world. And so if you're supposed to be pure, right, you're either a tenner or a hundreder or a thousander. And for whatever period of time, you're supposed to be untouched by anything else that's happening in the world so that you can have this pure perspective. But you need the Eta to be coming and fixing your observatory. Then you can't interact with them. You have to have these clear rules about how you won't be sullied by anything they say, even by accident.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll buy that. I will definitely buy that.
I'll sell it to you.
I'll sell it to you cheap. How about that?
Do you have any favorite quotations from the book?
There were a lot that I was really taken back by, but I don't know if I could recall a specific one at this time.
There's another good Ning forum thread in the Sword and Laser Anathem group started by Shimmer with just like find your favorite quotations and post them there. There are a lot of folks posting their quotations. I like the one Shimmer brings up in the original posting, which is, nothing is more important than that you see and love the beauty that is right in front of you, or else you will have no defense against the ugliness that will hem you in and come at you in so many ways.
Wow.
That's from Orlo to Erasmus.
I was sad when Orlo left, when mm-hmm. he was done. I felt that he was a really strong character, and, you know, he guided Erasmus, and I enjoyed him as a character. I was sad when he died.
Yeah,
I felt sad. I felt sad.
Well, I think you're supposed to. I mean, you need a permission, but I think that's the intended effect.
No, I know it was. I know, it was just kind of like, oh man, I felt it, you know.
Yeah.
I felt it powerfully. Well, I can't get into the Ning forums because I forgot what my master key is.
Uh-oh. Ning forums are run wild.
So I'm going to have to figure that out. Oh, well. I'm just going to make up numbers and try to get in.
So we should thank Audible for giving us the little freebies that we posted up on the website.
Oh, yeah. You guys should definitely check out the stuff that we have on there. If you haven't seen it already, we've got a free Metatropolis clip from Audible that you can download and listen to. It actually went out as a podcast accidentally because I use Feedburner and it just picked up on the audio file that was embedded, and so it sent it out to you guys. So maybe you listened already and enjoyed it. I hope you did. It was weird to hear Colonel Ty reading in the beginning.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, okay. I have to listen to more of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've started listening. I haven't gotten all the way through the first clip, but I'm definitely intrigued to see what they've got going. I think it's going to be pretty cool.
And we would like to solicit your comments on Anthem, not only in the Ning forums, obviously. That's the best place to discuss it with other folks. But if you just have general comments on the things we said in this episode, you can comment directly on this episode at swordandlaser.com on the main blog.
Oh, and by the way, we need to read our winner for the closing sentence contest that we had. It's been a long time since we got to that.
Yes, who won?
It was Michael M. By a
congratulations, Michael M.
margin. And his sentence was, with palpable relief, Schumann slumped over the rail, waiting for the pool of magma to close over the briefcase, and reflected to himself that he still hadn't had a cup of coffee.
It's the coffee. That's what pushed him over the top.
I know, because it's like this fantasy world, and then suddenly, he hasn't had his cup of coffee. I can relate to that.
Yes, exactly. He won by a lot, too. Like 55% of the votes.
55%, yeah. And then Michael H. came in a close second.
Not a close second.
Yeah.
At all.
No.
19%.
No, I guess you're right.
Sorry, Michael.
No, I
don't mean
bad to
rub it in your face, but it wasn't.
So Michael M. wins the very Logitech headsets that we are using right now.
Yeah.
A brand new one,
well,
though.
Yeah, and not the ones we're wearing right now, but a reasonable facsimile.
So, send us your address at thesordandlaser@gmail.com, and I'll send that off to you. It's sitting in my office right now.
We should also thank all of the folks that have sent us sample books. We've had several authors send along books to us, and we've enjoyed seeing those. So we appreciate the efforts that you make writing your books.
Absolutely, and I'm excited to pick the next book. We have to figure out how we're going to do that.
Yes. Yeah, so you did your dictatorial pick with Watership Down.
I did.
And then we kind of did Neal Stephenson. Does that count as my dictatorial book, or was that just sort of a general consensus?
No, that was a consensus because it was kind of a
okay.
big deal.
So I'm in charge now.
Yes, now is your turn.
I'm the Alexander Haig of this Reagan's been shot scenario.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you get to be the boss, Tom.
All right. Well, I will accept bribes, but mostly I will just take the bribe and not do what you want me to do for it, and come up with. I'll come up with one. There's not going to be any voting. This is not a democracy.
No, sometimes.
Not this time.
Not this
and then
time.
We'll get back to doing genres and votes and everything.
All right. Well, sounds good. I think that's all we got for today. This is our longest podcast yet.
Woo!
By the way, for our longest book.
Yeah, well,
it makes sense. Totally. All right, you guys, like we said, if you want to check out the blog, it's swordandlaser.com. The Ning group is at swordandlaser.ning.com. And the email address is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And we will hopefully see you next week, or if not, shortly after that.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys. Yeah.